Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
But if we're going to give Shanahan all this credit for, you know, running the football, looking like himself in that first, you know, first half, maybe three quarters or so, and maybe not shade Brock Purdy, but not give him the credit or all of the credit or a lot of the credit I think he deserves, I think we also have to believe that this offensive line is not built the way it is currently constructed. Their fourth-string left tackle, their third-string left guard, to be able to play this Kyle Shanahan run the football 35 times, milk that clock and get out kind of game. And in that same breath, if you can't do that, how are you helping your quarterback? You can't block for him. You can't do play action because your offensive line can't use it. And you're also on your fifth-string or fourth-string running back who isn't built to last or really built to be that kind of running back just yet. He's never had over 120 carries in college. I mean, this idea that they have the pieces in place to do Shanahan's offense really isn't true.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Yeah, you're true. What you say is absolutely, it's gospel. There's no doubt that offensive line. Actually, I thought it held up pretty well last night, considering.
Surprisingly, it was better than I thought it was going to be. Yeah,
and the running attack was not what we've seen when Kyle Shanahan has it going. You know, whether it's Christian McCaffrey or Jordan Mason this year, we know what it looks like when they're getting to the second level, no problem. And a lot of that is by design. And a lot of that is just, you know, they get into that rhythm. No, that wasn't there last night. But there was a commitment to the run in the first half. All that being said, that yes, that running attack was not vintage Kyle Shanahan, but there was a commitment to it. And I know what it is that I saw, because it was Troy Aikman that underlined it on the telecast, and he showed the linebackers on more than one occasion biting on that run.
Yeah,
and sucking up and allowing George Kittle to get behind the linebackers, allowing Pearsall to run free. There was a balance there. And again, I know it wasn't vintage Shanahan. And no, it wasn't, you know, Garendo wasn't wowing anybody. But I think he was doing just enough. And the question becomes, why wasn't that just enough, good enough to actually call for the football in the second half? Like, why abandon it altogether? I mean, there clearly was a balance, and it was clearly working in terms of the play action. And in order to establish play action, you got to run the football more than once. But as we pointed out, they threw it 16 to 17 times. I don't know. I hear what it is that you're saying. The offense is banged up. It's not a time for you to sort of get back to Kyle Shanahan football and just run 3 yards into a cloud of dust and be Jim Harbaugh. I get that. But throw it 16 out of 17 times? Was that called for? I mean, don't you think that there were better options in the second half for Kyle Shanahan and company?
I do, and maybe that lends credence to your point about Darnold and Brock Purdy. You know, we've talked a lot this year on overtime with Kyle Madsen and myself and Mark Grandy about, you know, okay, when everything else is going wrong, when your offensive line's not playing great, which is hard in itself to be a quarterback and make your throws and be precise, but also when you're not running the football, when your kicker's missing field goals and PATs, a great quarterback lifts all boats. He pulls you out of the mud. Joe Burrow with the Bengals this year, that defense is terrible. They're fighting for a playoff spot. Sam Darnold this year, to your example, like, the Vikings haven't always had a great running game this year, but Darnold is the offense. He is the quarterback lifting that ship or steering that ship in the right direction. Russ Purdy this year, last night especially, two just plain bad interceptions against the Dolphins, a bad interception against the Cardinals earlier this year, a bad interception. Games that, not to say you win last night, but you beat the Dolphins, beat the Cardinals. You know, you are still vying for a playoff spot, at least to some degree, this late in the season. And again, maybe that does lean, you know, to your argument of like, well, maybe Sam Darnold does do things that Brock can't do. Brock can be a great quarterback and all, but maybe last night when things don't go well and Shanahan says, I don't want to run the football, I'm going to pass the football, maybe Purdy isn't the quarterback you lean on to do those things. Maybe it is a quarterback like Sam Darnold to drop back 16 times in the second half alone.
And now he's injured once again as he's going to close out the season not playing against the Arizona Cardinals. Let's go back to last night and hear what Purdy had to say about his injury.
I mean, it doesn't feel the best, but just leave it at that. So we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, more. I just want to get more detailed about Brock Purdy and talking about what happened.
On that sack, I got hit on the backside, and yeah, basically just my arm was on fire kind of thing. And so I tried throwing a couple on the sideline, and I couldn't at that point. So yeah, it has nothing to do with tapping out of a game or anything like that. I love my teammates, and I'll go to the very end for them and this fan base and everybody. So that's what hurts me is like I couldn't finish the game. But again, we'll see tomorrow.
This is a worst case scenario for him because I think he wanted to use these last couple of games to make the case and shut guys like me up in the Sam Darnold nonsense to solidify the case that and leave everybody with a good taste in their mouth. Are you a Seinfeld guy? Big Chick, are you a Seinfeld guy?
I've seen it.
Okay, all right. Nobody watches Seinfeld around here.
No soup for you, Dan.
Well, there's no soup for you, but there was an episode where Jerry Seinfeld, as well as George Costanza, want to leave on a high note. You always leave on a high note. Leave them wanting more. Like if you tell a funny joke, get the hell out of the room. All right? See you later. Goodbye. I'll be back. That's all for me. And so when it... Thank you very much.
Nice.
That's about the extent of the knowledge around here when it comes to
something. It's a festivus for the rest of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The pole of grievance. But when it comes to Brock Purdy, I think these last two games were an opportunity just once again. And his agents know as much. Like, let's go out there and let's get your money. Let's prove to everybody and leave on a high note. All right? Because everything right now are just about getting leverage when you sit down in that conference room and you go head-to-head with the 49ers, all right?
Yeah.
Let's just prove to everybody that you're worthy of that deal. And so getting hurt and not being able to play, throwing the two picks, who has the leverage? My man Sterling Bennett, who has the leverage when we sit down? Is it the 49ers? Is it Brock Purdy? And, you know, his body of work over the last couple of years, when we sit down, who has the hammer?
Simply based on the fact that Brock is still under contract next year, like he's not a free agent, he has one more year on his contract, I would like to believe the Niners have some leverage here. You know, let's not forget that the way he's gone out, forget the injury, for example, like the last 2 weeks, it's been, wow, Brock looks really good. Wow, Brock looks like a franchise quarterback. This is the guy you pay $65 million to. But then the last 2 weeks, it's ended on the worst possible way. Interception here. Game-losing interception against Miami last week. And it's like, he hasn't really been able to string together four complete quarters, maybe outside of the Bears game a few weeks back, but even then, the Bears aren't very good. It's like, so I would say San Francisco has to have the majority of the leverage simply based on you're under contract for us this year or next year, whether you like it or not.
Is holding out a year or deciding not to pay him, is that an option?
I mean, I don't know if it's viable, but sure, you cannot pay Brock Purdy and maybe he gets frustrated and sits out and is like, really? But
He'll never do that.
No, he won't, but let's just play this thing out. Sure. Let's say he does that. Let's say San Francisco wants to play hardball. They're not going to pay him. They want him to prove himself once again next year, and they'll say, look, you know, we'll play the Kirk Cousins franchise tag game if we get down to that road. But let's say they want to play hardball. Okay, well, this year alone, they played hardball with Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
And both parties did that thing, and it took to the 10 days before week one against the Jets. Nick Bosa played hardball. He had all the leverage took until the Thursday before week number one against the Steelers. Are you willing to play that level of hardball with your franchise quarterback? And what message does that send to him and the team? Like, do you actually want me to be here? Like, what's going on? And if you do that, you better have a backup option. You're bringing back Joshua Dobbs. You're bringing back Brandon Allen. You're signing Kirk Cousins. Like, you have to have a fallback if that's the case. And in San Francisco, like, they don't have to pay Brock. I think they should. But to your question, Dan, like, I don't think it's on the table. But it's certainly, like, in a case of emergency option for them.
I mean, could you do something like this? Where, so this thing doesn't fester like Brandon Ayuk. Because I think there was a lot of carryover, and you just had a sense going back to the contract negotiations that this was the 49ers.
Well, he's posting after the Super Bowl, like, oh, you know, better, you know, be grateful for what you had here.
You don't want to repeat that.
No.
So is there a scenario there where you can tell Brock Purdy, look, we are not going to talk about a contract until week 8 or week 9? Because they did sign D'Amador Lenore. They're not adverse to doing it mid-season. We just need to see more. And we'll open up these contract talks in week 10 or week, whatever the week is. We feel as though we've seen enough. But we are going to go silent, and we ask you to do the same. Like, we're not going to talk contract. There's not going to be any back and forth. There's not an offer we're going to put on the table for you to reject. This isn't going to be about you getting on social media saying the last offer was trash and the verbal darts being exchanged by both parties. We will just do this towards the latter part of the season, and if it makes sense, we will sign your guy. But we're not doing anything until then. There's a memorandum. Option or no?
You risk that becoming a massive distraction next year. And for this team, the way they're built, how old the roster is, you can't afford to have a whole year with Brock Purdy kind of playing each week by like, oh, now I'm making 40. Now I'm making 50. Oh, now I'm back to 40. Like, you really can't.
I love it. Incentivize these guys, man.
I mean, that's the reason why you put incentives in the contract they sign. Maybe you tell Brock, hey, we'll give you $40 million per year, guaranteed essentially, but we'll give you incentives to reach the $65 million plateau that you want.
Yeah.
I think that's a much more likely scenario than, hey, let's shelve the conversations, have the entire offseason for the media to talk about it, for their family who just got married last year to talk about this of, hey, Brock, you know, how much you're going to make, you know, in 1 to 2 years' time, and have that linger. Like, I don't think you want that. This team has been through, like last year, too many off-the-field distractions. Trent Williams, Brandon Ayuk, to have that happen with the quarterback position again after it happened with Jimmy Garoppolo and after with Trey Lance. Like, the one thing you don't want is exactly what you're putting on the table right now.
You know, I would agree with you, but it seems like everybody's so dismissive. Like, no, that's not really an option. No, it's a formality. But think about it. Do you think if Miami could have waited another year, do you really think they would sign Tua to that sort of contract? Do you think Jacksonville would have signed Trevor Lawrence if they could have waited a year? The 49ers, if they know what they know now and Brandon Ayuk was not under contract, do you think he's signing that deal this offseason? I don't think so. So sometimes waiting, well, I'm just saying that sometimes waiting isn't necessarily the worst thing. And it doesn't seem as though it's even on the table more often than not. All right, we got to get to a break. The segment was sponsored by Chilton Auto Body. When we continue, I do want to do a little Jake Moody.
Oh.
No pun intended, but let's kick around some Moody. We'll be back. Sterling Bennett, Dan Avone, right after this.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
It's a great question.
That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
And what is that great question? Who should be the next starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers? Brock Purdy won Sam Darnold. Sterling Bennett and Dan Avone along with you. So Sterling, all right. We're just going to put, it's got to be one name or the other. Sam Darnold or Brock Purdy? We're assuming if Sam Darnold's available, just play the game. Who do you want?
Brock Purdy.
I know you did. Love that guy. All right, let's bring in my man, Carter Chickering, and Carter, who took the pulse of the people. Carter, explain what's going on in terms of your Twitter poll and the results, please.
I put a poll out that states, we want to know the faithful's opinion. Should the 49ers stick with Brock Purdy, or should they consider bringing Sam Darnold back for next season? We have 146 votes currently. The poll's been live for about 20 minutes. A third of the people think go back to Darnold, and two-thirds say stick with Purdy.
Mm. Now, Carter,
they get it.
You're a guy that, because you illuminated me to this, you had access, obviously, to practice a year ago, and Sam Darnold wasn't very impressive. Is that correct? What was your takeaway?
They don't give you much time to see the quarterbacks really do much at practice. My takeaway, though, was from the preseason games when you really got to see them out. I said this a bunch of times, but they punted a lot when Darnold was out.
I misinterpreted.
I don't know if his game is predicated to what Kyle does on offense, frankly. Mm. I think Purdy's game is much more predicated for that.
That's a good point. Because when you think about Kyle, it's not necessarily, he doesn't necessarily covet the strong arm quarterbacks, right? Although he did covet Sam Darnold, but it's
I
the
mean,
Kirk
kind
Cousins.
Of. He backed him up.
Yeah, there was a really interesting comment here actually on the Twitter poll, which is a good point. Is Walter Gibson basically says. People gave Purdy all this credit saying he had the Avengers by him and yada yada, but what about Darnold? Darnold has the Avengers next to him. He's played 11 games indoors this year, and Purdy hasn't had to do that, which he's struggled in weather. Just something to think about.
Yeah.
And he has Justin Jefferson, and he has Jordan Addison, and he has a really good offensive line. When they lost their left tackle, they went and got another starting caliber left tackle on Cam Robinson. Like, I know we want to sit here and compare the two box scores and how they have looked and whatnot, and obviously physical attributes lean towards Darnold's way. He's a mobile quarterback, has a really good arm. All those things are true, but who is Purdy? Like, if you swap places, and this is the big one, right? Like, if you swap places, does Sam Darnold lead this Niners team to the playoffs? And are the Vikings in contention for the NFC North lead this year?
If Brock Purdy's their quarterback? Yeah. That's a good question. I would say that if you have Debo and you're giving me Kittle and you're giving me Pearsall, those aren't necessarily, it's not Justin Jefferson and it's not, Addison and company, but some pretty good players. But listen, I guess the best way to look at this is, who do you want quarterbacking your team next year? Brock Purdy with a healthy Christian McCaffrey? With a healthy Kittle, with a healthy, obviously, Debo, and you got a year under your belt with a rising star in one Pearsall, and then, of course, Brandon Ayuk's back in uniform. With all those bells and whistles, do you want Purdy pulling the trigger or Sam Darnold? And you're with Brock Purdy, and I think that Sam Darnold could get the most out of B.A. as well as Debo. Whatever. I don't even know if Debo's going to be back with the team or what's left with Debo Samuel. But I think that Brock Purdy with Christian McCaffrey and all those toys, just simply because being the bigger, stronger quarterback, he has the wow factor. He has the sizzle. And no matter what it is that Brock Purdy does, he's not going to have that ability to quick strike, to get
sure,
you that touchdown.
You and I both know, Dan, sometimes you can over-sizzle a steak and it gets burned. And that's the one thing you can't do. Like, what you can't say is, wow, look at the arm. That is the exact thing that got them in trouble with Trey Lance. And I'm not saying Darnold's Trey Lance, but it was, wow, he's mobile, wow, he's big, wow, the arm. And they blindly were like, that's our guy. They literally chose him over Mac Jones, which in retrospect was a good choice, or maybe it wasn't. They both kind of stink. But they chose a different kind of quarterback that they thought fit their system, and he didn't. Because of the big arm, the wow factor, right? The things you see that are like, the optics look amazing, but in the meeting room, how he operates in the offense doesn't work very well. And I'm not saying Darnold's going to be like that bad, but what if you do move off of Brock Purdy? Okay, let's trade him away, get some draft picks, bring in Sam Darnold. Who's to say Darnold maybe doesn't revert back to who he was previous year seeing ghosts, but what if he does have a similar season to Brock Purdy this year? 20 touchdowns, around 10 interceptions, and you're like, oh, what did we just let walk out the door? That's the one thing you can't do. You can't have the guy and let that guy walk away.
Or you can't let Sam Darnold sign with another team and let him walk away. Because again,
well, they already did. That's the thing. They already did.
Well, as a backup, as a guy who had never played in the NFL except for that of, you know, two completely terrible organizations with absolutely no direction, whether it's Rule or it was Matt or Adam Gase. What the hell is he looking at in that press conference, well, Gase? I mean,
let me ask you this, Dan.
Yeah.
Why does one really good Darnold season supersede the fact that Brock Purdy had two incredible years as a starter already in this offense with these weapons?
Because I'm projecting for tomorrow. And when I look at the future, I think Sam Darnold is better equipped because he's a better quarterback. Just from a, again, it's not only that he can do what Sam Darnold, or excuse me, what Purdy did these last couple of years. Forget about, I'll just throw away this past year. What he did last year. Sure. And even the year before, it's, I think Sam Darnold has the capability of doing that and more because of the sizzle, because of the, look, when you see Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, you know the list. That's all wow. He has a little bit of, he's not in that tier group, obviously, but he has that sort of, oh, that you know, there's certain guys who can make certain throws. He has that raw ability. And Brock Purdy does not. And sometimes at the end of the day, when it comes to football, especially the quarterback position, it's sort of the haves or the have-nots. Not taking anything away from Brock Purdy. But if we're looking to upgrade, you know, you give me a guy who can, who has that arm strength and is not getting his ball batted down at the line of scrimmage. It can also be smart. Keep in mind, he's the number three guy coming out of the draft. Number three. And I know Brock Purdy was, the story's well told, but there's something to be said with a guy who has a draft stature that high, and it's clear that other teams didn't know what it is that they were doing because of poor management or poor coaching. I can't get over the fact that people want to have this conversation and think, I don't know, I need to be convinced. And nothing against you or anybody out there in Twitter land, but nobody's made a compelling argument as to why Sam Darnold would not be a better replacement at a cheaper rate. I guess is sort of where I'm going with all of that.
It's a hard argument to make because there really isn't anything to push back on. The physical talent for Sam Darnold's seemingly better than Brock Purdy. The arm certainly is. The financials lean Darnold's way. So you can't really push back on it outside of just pointing to history and saying, well, Darnold's had one really, really great year, and he's going to go to the playoffs, and we'll see what happens then. Whereas, well, I have two great years of Purdy and one down year, and that doesn't erase the fact that he was great the previous two, and it doesn't mean it's worth enough for me to say, you know what, I'm out on this guy to save, I don't know, $15 million a year. When I can cut Debo and save that, and I can cut Javon Hargrave and save that too, and say, well, I have my guy still. Like, that's where I think maybe for someone like myself who was like, well, Purdy's been great for 2 years, why are we having this conversation? Whereas for you, it's like, it makes all sense in the world to me. I could save 15 mil and get a guy with a better arm strength and maybe he's quicker. Like, I get more physical attributes where if Shanahan wants to stop running the football, Darnold can beat guys with his arm, whereas Purdy at times probably can't.
All right, Jake Moody. Let's first of all hear from, hey, listen, Jake Moody was, I got to give it up for him, man, because there's nowhere he could go, but yeah, I shouldn't.
Can't get any worse.
I shouldn't laugh, but when he ended that thing with that line drive single to left field on the onside kick, I was like, "Come on, man! There's a seat for you at the bar, baby. Let's drink this one over." Like that was, he was so clearly in his own head. Like that onside kick was just. He should have not walked to the sideline. Just gone straight in his uniform, gotten his rig, and I don't know if he drinks. But he should have just gone someplace other than Santa Clara and kept driving. Like, that was just, he just should have said, good night, everybody. That's the end of my
day. See you in 2025.
That onside kick was, I couldn't help but laugh at that point. Not to pile on the guy. But listen, it's not easy to take off your helmet and address the media, which is what he did last night.
It is right now.
Yeah, definitely probably one of the lowest times of my career, dating back to when I first started football. So confidence, you just got to keep it high. You have no other choice as a kicker. You just got to keep staying confident in yourself. And otherwise, you got nothing. So you got to stay confident and just keep going from here.
Is he your kicker next week, Sterling?
Well, next week he kind of has to be. It's not worth moving off of him for 1 week, but next year? I don't know how we are sitting here not talking about a kicker competition, more so than a quarterback competition come training camp.
Oh, that'll be a competition, there's no doubt.
I mean, it has to be.
What scares me about him is that he just, because you see this in the NFL, it just has the makeup of a guy that struggles with the Niners, maybe he's okay with his second team, and then that third team he just becomes lights out. Like, you know.
Which, it'll probably be Kansas City at this point. Like, just figures it out then.
Richard Sherman had some thoughts on the Niners kicker.
But Jake Moody, got to go. Jake Moody has to go at this point. I know fans, you know, are so sensitive because we're in a day and age where everybody gets a participation trophy, and no, you don't talk bad about anybody, but you got to do your job. And at the end of the day, you know, this team loses the game by 6 points. He missed two field goals in a PAT. You missed two field goals in a PAT. I mean, this is a business where you have to execute, especially at that position, and he has not done it at a high enough tilt. And I understand he was drafted and had all this acclaim. The Detroit Lions found their kicker in a brick shop, doing a heck of a job, Jake Bates. No offense to him, no shots at him, but you can find a kicker literally anywhere. I think they've done the best they could to hold on to him and try to make it work and try to develop him, but it's time to let it go.
Was it a mistake to draft him in the third round?
I mean, you kind of hard to say no, right? Well, or excuse me, kind of hard to say, you know, that it wasn't a mistake. I mean, that draft in retrospect looks terrible. That third round where you don't have a first round draft pick, you don't have a second round draft pick because of Trey Lance and Christian McCaffrey, the acquisitions of those two players. You have Jair Brown, who was really good last year and has kind of not been the same player this year. But you cut Cam Latu because he can't hang with the rest of the tight ends, which this group ain't great outside of George Kittle in itself. Then you have Jake Moody, who is the third highest drafted kicker since 2004. And this year alone, of the full-time kickers, 31st in field goal percentage. He's making just over 71% of his kicks this year on field goals. He's the highest drafted kicker in the league right now. Like, talk about a swing and a miss. I have no idea who was on the draft board at the time, but anybody would have been better. Six-string offensive lineman, a third-string safety, a six-string tight end. Doesn't matter. They'd give you something more than Jake Moody, who has actively hurt this team for almost 2 years now. This year against the Buccaneers almost cost them a game. Last night, whether it cost them a game or not, certainly hurt them last night. Against the Rams earlier this year, cost them. In the Super Bowl, he cost them with a block kick. Like, so much of Jake Moody's tenure has been, wow, this guy stinks. And in 2 years, he still stinks. They traded Trey Lance after 2 years and a broken foot that cost him one of those seasons. Yet, Jake Moody may have a chance to be here next year. It's just crazy to me.
And one guy we have not heard from is Tabor Pepper, who is online too. No.
Got the throat chop. Can't talk anymore.
Yeah, there's no defending him at this point. And we didn't hear from him. Apparently, Deebo Samuel has learned his lesson as well, because if ever there was a time to go after the guy. And why, at the end of the day, why is he going out there for 58 yards? It's just like Kyle Shanahan's like, keep missing him. Like, let's just... I mean, this is getting a little ridiculous. I mean, it's not as though those were two chip shots. You know what's funny about kicking, just generally speaking? Back when I was growing up, man, if you hit a 50-yarder, it's like, holy... I mean, it was headlines. Somebody hit a 50-yarder in the NFL. Somebody hit a 55. Now it happens with such high regularity in the National Football League. And it's so... These kickers are so streaky. It's tough. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, look at Tucker. Now, all of a sudden, he's human out there in Baltimore. Not even human. He's not even good anymore. And it's just, it's difficult. It's really sort of, and those dudes are usually the weirdest guys on the team. They're over there on their stationary bike while everybody else is pounding heads. It's just a very, very, I can never put too much emphasis on blaming or giving too much credit or fault when it comes to kickers at the end of the day.
I mean, sure, but he can barely make a 40-yarder. It's not like, oh, he's missing 60-yard field goals. Like, I don't know who the guy's name was back in the day, but he had, like, his foot was, I guess, deformed is the word to use. Like
Tom Dempsey.
I think, yeah, Tony Danza played him in the movie they made back in the day. Like, it's like, that guy's making field goal kick 63 yards downfield. Jake Moody's perfectly fine. He can't make a 40-yarder. Like, what's going on?
He was kicking with a wooden stump.
Right, and sure, it certainly helps you, but it's like, okay, just, can you just make a 40-yarder for me? Like, at this point in time, I am more nervous about Jake Moody going on. Like, whenever he trots out, I'm like, well, we're not scoring this drive. And when your red zone offense isn't that great this year, you got to have a kicker that can, you know, is worth a third-round pick. But Matthew Wright was hitting kicks for you in Seattle. Anders Carlson, who isn't even great, was hitting kicks for you, you know, 50-plus yarders out. Like, you can find kickers anywhere, whether it's the UFL, whether it's the FIBA. You can find these guys anywhere. Like, I'm talking bring in three undrafted free agents next year and say whoever wins gets the job. Like, there's no reason not to at this point.
You talked about Tom Dempsey's 63-yarder, which stood forever as the benchmark for the longest kick in the history of the NFL for field goal kickers. You know who tied his mark? This is a good knowledge. This, come on. I trust you as being...
I know David Akers tied it in Green Bay at halftime with Kaepernick, had the long run. I don't know.
Good call.
I don't
this, predates, that this predates Akers.
There was, I think, Matt Elam for the Broncos tied it with Denver.
Good back job.
In the day.
Jason Elam. Not Matt Elam.
Sorry. Yeah, yes. Jason Elam
very
tied it.
Very well done, Sterling. Very well done. All right.
Mile high. A lot easier to kick there.
With thin air. The reason why I know Jason Elam, he's the pride of the University of Hawaii. He's a former Rainbow. Not a lot of and their kicking is usually atrocious out there. So,
who was the quarterback that went to Washington and inevitably passed away? Colt something? Is that his name? Colt Brennan.
Colt Brennan. Yeah, good job. Colt Brennan. Yeah, he took them to it wasn't the Fiesta Bowl, but yeah, that was the last time the Rainbows were really, really good. Devon Best.
He played during like Sam Bradford and Colt McCoy and Tim Tebow's era, right?
Yeah, and Devon Best was on that team, and they had some wide receivers. Yeah, jeez, Sterling, my goodness. Knowledge reaching all the way out to the islands.
Who would have thought?
Just for a second before we wrap up the segment, and then we're going to get into the we'll go to the Warriors. Just to take an overview of the NFL, starting first of all, we'll get away from the 49ers. We'll come back, I promise, locally to the Niners as well as that of the Warriors. Oh, man. Golden State Warrior, misery is straight ahead. But just taking a look at the landscape of the NFL, starting out in the NFC, who has the advantage next week, you think, between Minnesota and the Detroit Lions? And here's the thing to keep an eye on in that game, is that somebody's got to have that conversation of, look, nobody has been a 14-win team and not been a number one seed. So you've never had a game between two 14-win teams. Somebody has to have the conversation, whether it's O'Connell or whether it's Campbell. Like, look, if we lose this game, although you never want to entertain losing, Campbell's never going to do this, but you can't have all the air go out of the room because you've got a playoff game that next week. It could be as early as the following Saturday. The tournament hasn't even started. So the idea like, oh, we just lost to Detroit. Oh, we just lost to Minnesota. It cannot be the end of the world for either one of these teams.
Yeah, I think Detroit's going to be at home. They get to host the game in front of their home crowd. They'll be riled up. You know, you can argue the Vikings are more healthy. You can argue that maybe the Vikings' defense is a lot better. Brian Flores is out there doing the Lord's work in Minnesota on defense this year. I guess in that case, I think I'd lean towards to Detroit, but the Vikings played the Lions tough early in the year when Detroit was not banged up this bad. And the Vikings are good. They're really you can argue they have two of the best head coaches on their team as their coordinators in O'Connell and Brian Flores.
Yeah, Flores.
Like, that's how loaded they are.
Yeah.
But I think just the home crowd in Detroit, it's really hard to beat the Lions at home. Really in general, to be honest with you, but I think it has to be Detroit, honestly.
Well, you know what? Listen, getting back to Sam Darnold, because he has some hurdles in front of him, because a lot of us just don't know, because we've never seen him in this capacity before. If he goes into Detroit, and I don't care that he has the tools and the weapons, but if he leads a team from behind, or he comes away with an impressive win in Detroit for a game like that, to get you the number one seed, I mean, he's moving up the ladder in terms of, like, that's the... And the unfortunate thing is, first of all, Minnesota, if this continues, there's no way in hell Justin Jefferson's going to let this guy leave the building.
No.
And secondly, it's not just the 49ers that are going to throw that hat into the ring and saying, listen, we want... He's going to be coveted by more than just one team. All right, let's continue the 49er talk and get out to Steel Toe, hanging out in San Mateo. Steel, what's up, buddy?
Thank you, Dan. Sterling. Yeah, I think it's this is beyond a Brock Purdy situation. This is kind of beyond Kyle Shanahan. After this Super Bowl, when we find out the winner of the Super Bowl, we have a chance here to get possibly Steve Spagnuolo, who probably is in a position to accomplish something Bill Belichick or any other coach, George Seifert, has ever done, win three Super Bowls in a row. He knows Andy Reid's weakness. He knows Patrick Mahomes' weakness. And we have that opportunity to get a defensive coordinator to be our head coach, to have an edge over the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's part of the problem. It's Jed York is kind of a mama's boy. He won't have any balls to get the real head coach to have an edge over the best coaches in the league. That's what this is really about. It's about getting Kyle Shanahan will never be better than Andy Reid. So you got to get a better coach. Steve Spagnuolo is right there serving you in a silver platter. And this guy just doesn't want to think about it. Jed York is... I can't stand Jed York. I don't know how the 49ers is going to win.
All right, Steele, thanks so much. Speaking of the Kansas City Chiefs, before we get off football talk and we get into the Warriors, by the way, we see the callers, Leo and company, hang on. We're going to get to a break and go full-fledged Golden State Warriors. But Kansas City, I mean, the fact they got the number one seed and are playing their best football now, look out. Three-peat very much in sight. What say you?
It's last year all over again. They didn't play great to begin the year. They got hot at the end. The Ravens don't run the football in the playoffs. The Bills don't get it done. And then bang, bang, boom, we're sitting here, Niners, Chiefs, Super Bowl once again. But I want to push back on Steeltoe a little bit. Defensive coordinators that go to be head coaches usually don't fare pretty well in this day and age in the NFL. This isn't the Belichick era anymore. Tomlin has been good, but they haven't won in like a decade and a half. And the Niners did try to hire Steve Spagnuolo this year. That was the first team they called when they fired Steve Wilks, was, hey, Kansas City, can we get Steve Spagnuolo? The Chiefs gave him a raise and said, you can forget about that opportunity, Steve, and that was all said and done. They also tried to get Bill Belichick. They also tried to get Jeff Ulbrich from the Jets. Like, they tried to make all these moves to bring in another defensive coordinator to help this team, but you also weren't getting rid of Kyle Shanahan in this day and age when everybody else would want to have Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan isn't going anywhere. Sorry, Steele. All right, Leo, hang in there. It's the Warriors straight ahead. That's right. Warriors losers again. This team circling the drain. What do we do? Answers straight ahead with Sterling Bennett and Dan Abone on 95.7 The Game.
Holy cannoli. This is crazy.
Back to Will and Diddy on 95.7 The Game.
Sterling Bennett and Dan Abone on New Year's Eve. The Golden State Warriors now a 500 team. 16 up and 16 down after their latest loss once again at the hands of the Cleveland Cavaliers. As the Cavaliers, by the way, that team is just storming. 28-4 is the record as they continue to hold off the Boston Celtics. Not only hold off the Boston Celtics, as the Celtics suddenly have fallen on hard times. The Celtics won their last time out, but there's been a rash of losses on the part of Boston still. At 24-9, the Celtics are clearly one of the better teams in the NBA, but it's the Cavaliers, the team to beat right now, and they took it once again to the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors, a 500 team after their latest loss. The final numbers last night was another anemic offensive performance on the part of the Warriors as they failed to reach the century mark. 113-95 are the final numbers as Golden State once again losers as we continue to find at least search for answers. We're just going to get right out to the phone lines and start the Warriors talk with Leo's hanging out during the break. Leo, what's up, man? Fix the Warriors. What's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing good.
Good. Yeah, you know, I've been hearing for the last week and even after yesterday's game, you know, with the Craig press conference, you know, to think, for anybody to think that you can go out and get one player like a Cameron Johnson, and bring him in here, and suddenly it's going to turn this team around, and they're going to make a run, you know, for a Western Conference championship. You know, that kind of thinking, you're delusional. It's not going to happen. First of all, if you look at the stats between Cameron Johnson and Kuminga, they're not that much different. Right now, the Warriors are 10th place. They're the only team of the top 10 teams who have a losing record over the last 10 games. Everybody else is playing it, but I don't expect many of these teams, especially the top four or five teams, to really start playing so badly that the Warriors are going to make a run to get a home court advantage in the playoffs. And even a 5 or 6 is going to be very difficult for them to attain. As far as I'm concerned, I think the ownership needs to go to Steph and say, listen, you know, it's not that we're giving up right now, but we're going to play our younger guys. We hope they get better as the season progresses. We're going to live with some of their mistakes. We're going to quit this 10, 11, 12-man rotation and get those young guys some experience. And maybe we get lucky in the playing game and win a playing game or two and actually get into the playoffs. I think that's the best-case scenario. And as far as the core four that, you know, I think they have with the young guys with Moody and Kuminga, Pods and Jackson Davis, I think you got to play those guys as much as you can. You know, I watched them the other night when they were out there and they made their little run, that group, and they, you know, in the fourth quarter, and they just basically ran out of gas there at the end. But I'm all for playing those guys as much as we can and then let Steph know we're going for it with our young guys. And then at the end of the season, during the off season, they got to make some decisions. Actually, Steph has to make a decision. Does he want to stay here, or does he want to go someplace and chase that fifth ring? Hey, they've got 4 rings. No one expected that last one. Wiggins, you know, had an outstanding series against Boston, and he led them basically to that last one. I think fans should be happy. You know, let's think about the future a little bit here and start preparing for that. And be happy that they had 4 rings and had a nice little dynasty going there for a bit.
Good job, Leo. I don't see it, Sterling. Steiny was talking about it. I don't see Steph Curry in another uniform. I don't see it on it for a couple of reasons. First of all, I don't think Steph at the end of the day wants that to happen. And I know it's important to win championships, but I think it's also important for Steph to be with one team his entire career. I don't think Steph, no one needs to remind him how important he is to the community, how entrenched he is here in the community. His kids go to school here. Their quality of life is a real deal when it comes to people like that as Steph Curry. I think there's much more to his life than just basketball. Now, basketball and his competitiveness, it's real deal, right? And winning a title, yes. But is he to the point of being obsessed where I'm going to go join, fill in the team? I'm going to go to OKC. The other reason is, if he's not going to be the guy, because I'm assuming that if he goes to another team, he's just going to be a piece. Does he want to be remembered as the guy that chased a title, albeit got one? To me, I think that there's a moral clause with this guy that's probably unlike anybody that's ever played the game. I think that he's such a genuinely good guy, and he has... his ethics are all in line that it just doesn't look at who knows. I don't know what's ruminating in his head. I can just tell you after watching this guy play here for so many years that does not seem like the ideal conclusion to what has been just a one of one career with the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah. And you look at it from maybe a different lens of, you know, baseball, for example, like Steph Curry is the Golden State Warriors, Derek Jeter. Klay can leave, Draymond can go, but Jeter's going to stay. And I think in this case, you know, Klay's already gone, right? And Draymond, Steiny, I'd probably agree with Steiny. They probably shouldn't have re-signed him a couple years back, but Steph Curry is the Golden State Warriors. He is their financial moneymaker for sure, but like what he means, like you said, Dan, is like to the fan base, to the community. Like the only other team I can think of that Steph may be wanting to play for is Charlotte. And they are in no position to go get Stephen Curry. And, like, maybe the familiar ties and, you know, being home, whatever, but...
But if you're ring chasing, you're not going to Charlotte.
Right. Like, everything he would need, maybe outside of the feel goods, oh, I'm playing in front of my hometown crowd, like, I don't think Steph cares anymore about that stuff. I don't. He may have when he was 23, 24, and you know, maybe when the Warriors were talking about trading him or Monte Ellis, like maybe, but like not now. He's almost 40 years old. He's 37 years old. This team is giving him everything he wants, maybe outside of a roster surrounded by superstars, but they're trying to, you know, I don't want to say two timelines this thing, but they're trying to see if Kuminga and Moody and Pajemski and Trace Jackson Davis, all these guys can maybe be the next wave to help lift Curry up to being a five-time NBA champion, but I just don't buy the idea. Or even the thought of Stephen Curry is thinking about or maybe that frustrated to a point of, I want to leave Golden State. Like, that sounds so absurd to me. Of like, really? Like, we're thinking about Stephen Curry or he's thinking about playing elsewhere. That just like doesn't come across my mind. And I know, you know, for the sake of conversation, we have to have it, but I don't think the Golden State Warriors have done anything to put themselves in a place to make Steph feel that way.
And I don't think Joe Lacob is ever going to approach Steph Curry and saying, look, it, we want to do what's best for you. Do you want out, man? Because we're going to rebuild here. I want to do what it is that you want to do. I don't think, even if Steph Curry went to Joe Lacob and saying, hey, listen, I've been a good soldier. I really want that title. Can we work something out? I think Lacob is going to push back on that. I think Lacob, unless his arm's completely twisted, Lacob is not going to give in to that demand. Because, right, first of all, he understands that he doesn't want to be the guy that traded Steph Curry. Secondly, he prints money. And Lacob is a business tycoon at the end of the day. Let's not forget where these guys came from, all right? They're not, I mean, these guys are not exclusive to the NBA. Like, they're not part of that subculture. They made their money outside of the NBA. They came into the NBA once they cashed in on whatever business or whatever venture or whatever startup or whatever it is that provided them the chance to then go buy their toys in life, which happened to be an NBA basketball franchise. So I say that because he's very aware of the bottom line, which is, how do I increase my revenue model? And you don't do it by trading Steph Curry. Steph Curry, I would say even more so than LeBron James, right up there with Michael Jordan in terms of merch, in terms of things that you can't even quantify. When I say Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, like, those two are one and the same. And what that just means, you can't put a price tag. I don't know how much, what his price tag is this year, but it's not enough. I mean, that guy, if he wanted $200 million, that's not even enough. What it is that he means, not only for the Warriors, but for the NBA. And listen, I don't want to get too theatrical here, but it's a dollar and cents league. As much as we want to talk about what's right for the guy and, you know, what's morally right, what's morally wrong as far as, you know, the sort of guy that he is, Joe Lacob still sees things through the lens of, I got to balance books and make money. And how do I do that? Well, it's with Steph Curry in my uniform until he can no longer do it any longer.
Well, and we're also acting as if, and I get it, they're 4-13 in their last 17 games. It hasn't been pretty. It's been really bad. They're 3-7 in their last 10. Like, it's been a really bad stretch. But we're also talking as if this team is like totally incompetent and doesn't have some sort of a plan in place and isn't trying things to make themselves be better. I mean, it's not like they have a brand new head coach and a brand new GM. It's a second year GM that brought in Buddy Hield and others to help fortify the bench, which has had mixed results, lesser, you know, not great as of late, but they also have Steve Kerr at the helm still that Steph Curry trusts and loves. Like, Steph would be leaving the best place for him as a human being if he wanted to leave. And maybe he does. Maybe in a year's time after this year, if they go out in the play-on or the play-in round and or they don't make it at all, maybe he says, I'm done, like, I want to go elsewhere. But the fact that one season like that would make Steph feel that way feels so absurd. But we're also, like, they're only four games, like, behind the four seed. It's not like one week of play can't find themselves back in the sixth spot. Like, all it takes is one 2-week stretch. The question is, can they do that? And Like, that's really what it comes down to, is like, do you believe that this team, as it's currently constructed, with an 8-to-9-man rotation, with Kuminga being the two, and hopefully guys can get healthy again, like, do you believe they can make some sort of a push, whether it's before the trade deadline or it's shortly after that, that they can find themselves, you know, in the mix again? Because they're only 16-16. If this is the worst they play all year, which could certainly be the case, cool. Like, you played your worst basketball in December? Great. You have 4 other months to get things right. But can they do that is the question.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think the 12-3 start gave them this buffer. And now you're going through, we all know that this was a tough stretch for them. The teams that they're playing, we knew that there was the potential for them to struggle. That's one way to look at it. Can they get back? Now that you've been through this, let's get back to Warrior basketball and what it is that we were doing and the buy-in defensively. Let's get back that energy. Let's get back to our winning ways. Or when you look at this team and the number of losses, when I see them lose to the Cavaliers, get blown out by more than 50, to Memphis, losing Christmas Day to the Los Angeles Lakers, all these losses, I look at the other team and it's just, it's sort of fundamental. It's just like the Warriors just aren't as good. And sometimes, you know, some of it's like, oh, somebody needs to get unlocked, or so-and-so needs to start playing better, or